What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex, and given there is nobody else introducing themselves today, you may have noticed that I am here solo. This is the second time, I think, that I have done The Stack solo. Unfortunately, Justin and Pete had other obligations and could not be here today. We will be back to your regularly scheduled programming next week. So thank you for bearing with me as I proceed to monologue for the next range of time talking about the comic books that have come out this week. I'll also mention, if you want normal ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Normally there are more people on this show other than me just talking about comics and reviewing them, but that is what we're going to do. I'm going to review some comics. Lots of comics came out this week, lots of big issues. I'm going to put a spoiler warning up top here for everything that we're going to be talking about, because we're going to kick it off with a big one, Absolute Batman number 20 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Nick Jurgoda. Lots going on in this issue, and a lot was focused on the Mecha Robins that appear on the cover. However, just a word of warning here, they don't really show up at all until the very end. It seems like the big battle is saved for the next issue, but that's not a knock on this at all. This is a really character-driven issue following Batman as he deals with the death of Jim Gordon. Last issue, he's been blamed for it. He's being taunted by the Absolute Scarecrow. He meets up with, I'll stop saying Absolute now, but Joe Chill, among other characters. And we also check in with his friends. And this, I think, is one of the real strengths that gets underplayed about Absolute Batman, is you feel like there's going to be this inevitability of leading up to, oh, this is where these characters end up. They're going to end up in their classic iterations. We talked about this a little bit with the Jim Gordon death thing, twisting things in a way you weren't expecting. And the same thing is happening with the villains here. You know, we get Waylon, Killer Croc, is trying to rebond with Edward Nygma, the Riddler. These aren't characters that got hurt by Batman and are suddenly turning evil. They're friends of his that had horrible traumatic things happen to them, and they are headed in different directions. So it makes it much more interesting to read. It's very multifaceted. There's a lot of great character work going on in Scott Snyder's writing. And of course, Nick Jurgoda's panel layouts, they're unlike anything else in comics right now. That's the real strength of Absolute Batman. Sure, you're getting the monster versions of everything. There's a absolutely horrific two-page spread of Absolute Joker in here. And you're getting your regular beefy Batman. Though I will note there's one panel where he's talking to Joe Chill in the jail, where it feels like Nick Jurgoda drew classic Bruce Wayne Batman peeking through the bars, which threw me a little bit. Maybe the point is he is becoming the Batman we all know and love for the mainline comics. Maybe, maybe not. Whatever it is, this is a must pick up every single month. Next up, Ultimate Endgame number 4 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, art by Jonah Scharf, with Terry Dodson and Rachel Dodson. It's taking place in two different points in the Ultimate world, the Ultimate universe, as the team tries to stop the Maker, the evil Reed Richards, from escaping from the time bubble that he created 2 years ago in the real time of the Ultimate universe. On the outside, Captain America is leading forces against the Maker's loyal lieutenants, while inside, a small team is battling the Maker, who is turned into a tree, and corrupted Doom, who is the other Reed Richards from this new Ultimate Universe. So lots of stuff going on. Plus, Spider-Man died last issue, and he continues to be dead, which they established right at the beginning when they're like, hey, just travel back in time and bring him back. And Iron Man's like, I can't because of the chrono, whatever. You know, sci-fi stuff. It happens. There's a lot going on here, and I think we've been mixed to negative on this. Personally, I really want to like it. I go in every issue thinking, okay, this is the one, this is going to do it. And I don't know that we're quite there yet in the penultimate issue of the Ultimate Universe of Ultimate Endgame. There's one more after this. But it's starting to get there. There's some big battles that happen outside. We suffer another big loss with one of the heroes. And things kind of end up in the places this ended, this issue, that I thought they were going to start at in issue number one. And maybe that's the problem here. Maybe it's expectations versus reality, but this has felt like a very small story up until now. Maybe I brought this up on a previous podcast, maybe not, but this, I would never wish this on anybody, but this would be a very different comic if it was Mark Millar and Brian Hitch doing it in the previous iteration of the Ultimate Universe, I think it would be hitting what I expect and what a lot of readers expect in terms of we are ending a universe right now, rather than this big sci-fi story that Dennis Kemp is building up. And to that point, there are big moments in here. We get a great sequence with the Guardians of the Galaxy that feels huge, this iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy. We do get that big character death, which is actually much more shocking, I think, than Spider-Man dying, which felt a little perfunctory in the last issue. So we'll see. There's still a chance to turn this around in the last issue. Maybe I'm being Charlie Brown with football here, but I want to like this. I want this to work. I like the team. It's not hitting that high that I wanted to hit, but we'll see. One issue to go. Transformers number 32 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Jason Howard. This issue is set entirely on Cybertron as Alita Prime leads her forces against the Decepticons. We do get some very fun Cybertronian Decepticons in this issue, led by dude that I'm blanking the name on. I hope Pete never listens to this because he's probably screaming right now that I like Transformers. It's fun, but I can't tell most of them apart. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I'm racist towards Transformers. I apologize. There's fun action in here. Jason Howard knows how to draw an action scene. You do get big battles throughout. I know I keep hitting on the same thing over and over month after month, but this is also my least favorite mode of Transformers. We don't get the character moments. We don't get Optimus Prime interacting with humans and trying to protect them. You don't get that heart there. It's just boxy things banging up against each other. Even if there is some cool sword action and cool action throughout here, it is what it is. But it's one of the biggest titles in the comic book industry, so hooray for that. Speaking of things that are big, Godzilla vs. America, Texas, number one from IDW by Various. This is me being very rude, but the comp copy that was very nicely sent over by IDW didn't have credits in it for the most part, and I usually try to look through the comic for the credits, but they weren't in there. So my apologies to everybody who worked on this. You're all wonderful people. This is part of a bigger series from IDW that sends Godzilla to different areas and usually has local creators working on it. The thing that didn't quite work for me about this one, even though there's some fine Godzilla tales in here, is by broadening it out to the entire state of Texas, we're losing the specificity of sending Godzilla to cities like Los Angeles or Portland or Kansas City is another one, where you have those local creators playing on very, very specific things about their cities and jokes in their cities. And either you get it because you visited the place or you know something about the place or you don't, but either way, it only could take place in that city. Texas, you may be aware, is a very large state and there's a lot of things going on. So there is one story that's set in Austin and that got closer for me in terms of what I want out of this series versus Godzilla just tromping his way over some cattle like he does on the cover. It's a very fun cover here with the Texas flag flying in the background. All in on the series. Love that they're doing this. Keep doing it. Keep finding very specific cities and places, but maybe not states. That's too big. It's too big. It's too much. Too much going on. Unless, I guess, Rhode Island. Rhode Island is small. Okay, let's move on. Barbara Gordon Breakout, number one from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki, art by Amanke Nuhulpin. This is the latest Next Level title, and it's spinning off of Batman number 9, where Barbara Gordon, per the title of this book, was thrown in a Supermax facility by Vandal Savage, who currently runs the Gotham City Police Department. Now, I love this team. Mariko Tamaki can do no wrong. Amanke Nuhulpin, really solid, really good artist, always delivers. But I was a little confused as why this is an ongoing series instead of a mini series, because if the idea is, let's throw Barbara Gordon in jail, she's not going to be in there forever. She's eventually going to break out, like they say in the title. And then you head into a situation, which we all are going to get this reference, Prison Break Season 2, after they broke out of the prison, where they're like, well, now we're broken out of the prison and we're on the run. And then that kept going for several seasons. So this doesn't seem like an ongoing concept to me. And I'm not necessarily convinced about that after the first issue, but that doesn't matter because It is taking Barbara Gordon, stripping away all of her tools, all of her computers, everything, throwing her into prison with some real jerks, including, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name, but I think it's Di, the villain who, I don't know if she was introduced, but she definitely showed up in Christian Ward's Two-Face series, and she thinks she's the daughter of Two-Face. She may or may not be, but she is the main villain, at least in this first issue, as Barbara Gordon gets in a big fight in the prison yard. I had a lot of fun with this. This is good. I'm excited to see how this goes. There's a good cliffhanger at the end here. So another win from the Next Level label, even though I'm still a little iffy about this title's long-term chances. Maybe they'll change it into Barbara Gordon Broken Out. I don't know. They could do like pimple patches or something. Where are Justin and Pete? Okay, Spectacular Spider-Man Brand New Day, number one from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Marcus Toe. We talked to you, Dan, about this on the live show a couple of months back, so do go listen to that chat because he revealed a lot about this book, including that Marvel has been a little confusing about selling it as a five-issue miniseries or maybe an ongoing. He says they're doing five issues. He sees it as an ongoing. If you buy it, there's a big thing that happens in the second arc. So he wants this to be a big seller. But this is trying to do a couple of things at the same time. The most basic thing it's trying to do is give you a title that is Spider-Man Brand New Day, given there is a movie called Spider-Man Brand New Day that is going to be coming out later this summer. It's not a one-to-one to that, because this takes place in the actual comic book Brand New Day era. So we're getting Kingpin in here. There's a lot of establishment of he is about to leave town, as he does on TV. Mr. Negative is the big villain. Frank Castle, the Punisher, shows up as he does in the movie. Maybe Hulk will show up later on. I don't know. Maybe Sadie Sink will show up as whoever. We'll see. I don't know. They haven't revealed her character. But there is a surprising amount of setup in here. In fact, we get an introductory page that introduces who Spider-Man is. And then a couple of pages later, we get a, I believe, two-page spread that sets up, hey, here's what's going on going into the Spider-Man Brand New Day era. And then there's more setup that happens in the dialogue throughout. So it's a testament to Dan Slott that he knows how to throw all that in there and still make it an enjoyable story at the same time. It feels like he has not physically, but mentally aged Spider-Man down a little so that he matches the Tom Holland Spider-Man on screen a little bit better, which honestly is smart. You know, I can see comic book fans complaining about this because they're like, oh boy, you're just catering, you're pandering to the movie audience. But you want something for the movie audience. You want the movie audience to see the movie, be like, hey, that was fun. Go into the comic book store and then have the retailers be like, yeah, pick this up. You can just start with this issue. You don't have to go back 30 issues. You don't need to go back 1,000 issues to the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man. You can just jump right in with this and get everything you need to know to read a fun Spider-Man story. And the story itself, which doesn't get delved into too much in this issue, is Spider-Man steals a codex that has the list of all the criminals in New York's name from the Kingpin. The Punisher is on his tail. Mr. Negative is on his tail. Marcus Toe draws a fun story. Nice, solid Spider-Man. I do have questions on the cover. How many times Spider-Man is drawn with like his legs spread, showing off his butthole like a cat? But again, you may be wondering where Pete and Justin are at this point. Destination Kill, number one from OD Press, written and drawn by Joe Palmer. I also talked to Joe Palmer a couple of weeks back. That interview is in the podcast feed, so check that out. This is his first written and drawn book, creator-owned book, I believe creator-owned book, from OD Press. It is very much in the mode of Judge Dredd, set in a future hyper-violent world, but it's very funny. There's a great cartoony style that Joe Palmer brings here. It's not exactly, but those of you who've been reading Tigris Island, EPHK does the art there. It's less slick and shiny, but it seems like kind of in the same genre. Very fun book. Very excited to read more of this. There were multiple points where I laughed out loud that I wasn't expecting. Feels a little Kyle Starks in the humor sometimes as well. So definitely recommend picking this up. This is another winner from Oni Press. Innards, number one, from Ignition Press, written by Rob Guillory, art by Sam Lofty. My apologies to Rob if I mispronounced your last name. I always get worried about that. But this is like Event Horizon, but what if it was going to the center of the Earth instead of deep into space? That's probably the best pitch of it. There's a lot of big sci-fi ideas going on here. There's a new take on teleportation, but most of that is in service of sending these deep crust of the Earth diggers down below the Earth to mine a new power source after the rest of the power on Earth has been depleted. But they are not alone down in the center of the Earth. There's more there. This is a slow play horror debut from Rob Guillory and Sam Lofty. I'm going to sneeze right now. Excuse me. Unfortunately, no way of cutting that out of a podcast. I really apologize, everybody. If Justin and Pete were here, they do all of the editing, so they could have cut it out, but not me. Anyway, Innards is good. I had a fun time with this one. Like I said, lots of big sci-fi ideas. There's no lack of innovation going on here is, I guess, the best way of saying it. So if you like a slow play horror, if you like some weird creatures and good character dynamics as people probably slowly get picked off and corrupted one by one, this is one to check out. Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Javier Rodriguez. This is the penultimate issue of this mind-bending title as John Jones finally comes face-to-face with Despero, who is ripping apart his mind and battling with the Green Martian. Gorgeous book, absolutely beautiful. Something we were talking a little bit on our Patreon Discord, the Comic Book Club Discord, a bit is how the story has gone in some directions that have been maybe a little hard to follow. And I think a lot of that is because of the introduction of Despero, who's the purple being who is taunting John Jones, our detective here. And you really feel that in this issue. It feels like it's gotten away from the white Martian, green Martian conflict that made the first six issues so strong and direct, even between everything else that was going on. Despero seems to be the main villain here, and I still love looking at this book, but I am hoping that it comes back together again in the final issue, and there's every indication it will. There's a big revelation maybe in here about one of the characters that is super sad if it's true, but I'm holding on and waiting to see what happens with the final issue. Also, there's a panel here where they encourage you to cut apart your comic, and kids, don't do that. My kids, very specifically, don't do that. Iron Man, number 5 from Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmen Carnero and Jan Basaldúa. This is the end of the first arc of the series that has found Iron Man battling Madame Mask and AIM, who want to create their own Tony Stark for their own purposes. There's a lot of big twists and turns in this issue as first Tony battles the Fixer, who has built his own Iron Man suit, and then ultimately we get a new villain reveal, we get a new setup for Iron Man. I'm really digging what Joshua Williamson is doing in this title. It feels maybe not innovative, but it feels like the next iteration of Iron Man that we haven't really gotten since, I would say, Matt Fraction was on the title many, many years ago around the dawn of Iron Man, the movies. So I'm loving this. I really like how the team is drawing Tony as well. He feels a little shaggier, a little looser. It's less the slick corporate jerk that we've been getting, and particularly in a world where I don't want to speak for all of our listeners out here, but certainly I'm anti-billionaire. Getting a billionaire who is doing billionaire stuff but being cool is maybe not a character I want to read, but reading the more science-focused Tony is very interesting. I love it. I'm looking forward to more. Undiscovered Country, number 36 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. After 8, maybe 9 years, this is finally the last issue of this title about a future America that has been split into different rings or sections, each with their own focus on American innovation. It's all come down to a battle on the moon with a giant Statue of Liberty. And I'll tell you what, this book has gone in some wild, weird directions. I don't know if they completely tied everything that I wanted up But this was still a very satisfying final issue to the series. They definitely landed in a place where they say something about America, the idea of America. They don't really hold back on the problems of America, but more talking about the promise of it and what it potentially could be. So Charles Soule talks about this a little bit in the back matter, how years ago, this is, you know, I think 2015, 2016, they started hatching this book. America is in a very different place now than it was then. And this title seems as relevant, maybe more relevant than it did back then. So this is one that, give it a couple of years, I'm very curious to revisit as a whole and read through, because it's come out so sporadically. It's been a little hard to follow the story sometimes, but always looks great. And hats off to the whole team for making it through this one together. Hidden Springs, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Rob Williams, art by Neil Vendrell. This is one of the bigger surprises of the week. You see this cover with a tiny little person facing off against an enormous monster with the shell. It kind of looks like something from the deep sea, and a little bit of a spoiler, it is. But the best way of selling this is it's sort of like Cocoon with a kaiju, is maybe what I'd say. There's some great characters that are set out here. We get a bunch of old folks who are lost in the woods. They encounter the kaiju of the title, not of the title, the kaiju of the cover. And some forces are coming this way. I'll tell you, I kind of expected like a return to your youth type thing. And maybe that is coming. But it seems like instead it's going to be these older people who thought they've reached the end of their life going on one last adventure. Maybe. Whatever it is, it's a cool creature that's drawn in here. Like I said, some good characters. I really enjoyed this one. I'm curious to see where it goes in issue two. And if you like 80s movies like Cocoon, check this out. Emperor Aquaman, number 17 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by John Timms and Paolo Villanelli. Now, Black Manta is on the cover, but he doesn't really do much in this issue. It's more focused on Aquaman pairing up with Jaro, the little Starro who looks at Batman as his dad, going into space and encountering a new riff on Starro. We've got a lot of those in comics, and this is yet another one in terms of how Starro works. I like this adventure generally, and I like that Jeremy Adams is focusing on one different, like, deep space slash sea type thing per issue. There's some good adventure stuff here. My one little quibble with this is Jaro seems very serious. And whenever Scott Snyder in particular writes Jaro, a character that he invented, it's so silly. It's a little Starro in a Robin uniform that's like, did I make you proud, Dad? And we're missing that here because he's pairing with Aquaman instead. So it's not humorless as an issue, but there's not quite as much humor to the situation. And that's what I want out of my Jaro. I enjoy Jaro. That's what I want. So there you go. Amazing Spider-Man Venom Death Spiral Body Count, number one for Marvel, written once again by Charles Soule, art by Kev Walker. In this issue, we finally find out how many people Spider-Man and Venom have had sex with. We find out their body count. So that's pretty sweet if you've been wondering that the entire time. I'm kidding. It's actually a prequel slash sequel to the really excellent Death Spiral event that went through Amazing Spider-Man and Venom recently. We get an origin for Torment, the character who is a serial killer who was plaguing them. There's some surprising revelations here, specifically he was talking in the event about, oh, I can see the spirals of your family. And it already always felt like serial killer talk. Here in this issue, it's framed up as it's an actual power. Like he literally can see how people's family lines are connected and gives him for a motivation for why he's trying to pair them back. It also, you could probably see this coming because the tease for we may not quite be done with Torment yet, which is nice because this was a really interesting character to follow. As a one-shot, I don't know how necessary it is for understanding what went down in Death Spiral, but as an addendum, a end note to the whole thing, it works very nicely. And man, I love Kev Walker's art. He is doing one of the Midnight Horror titles, the Benjamin Percy one, which I want to say is Fantastic Four. And I'm really looking forward to that because he draws some good horror stuff. He's been doing the same thing on Infernal Hulk as well for Philip Kennedy Johnson. So good looking issue, like Torment, weird, disturbing stuff going on here. If you like the Death Spiral crossover, pick this up. Speaking of serial killers, World Tree number 20 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco. Now, we've talked about this title every single issue so far, and I think we brought up similar complaints, which is it's hard to follow the action because there's multiple timelines, an enormous sprawling cast, and every issue they kind of just drop you in with, well, you know who these people are and what their relationship is to each other and the undernet, the evil internet that lives below the internet and is haunted by horrible demons. So at the same time as all those things feel like a big impediment for getting in this title, it's still gorgeously drawn by Fernando Blanco in every issue. And this is one of the issues where it does settle down and really focus for the most part on two characters. There's also one additional character that is trying to rescue the other character who is bleeding out and interrogating and being interrogated by one of our big villains who wants to bring the undernet out and bring it to the real world. We know from seeing the future, he's successful, so that's kind of laying over the entire thing. But as a character piece with a villain and a hero facing off of each other, well written as always by James Tynion IV, very much for adults, full of tons of nudity and ultra violence. But this is one of the more fun ones. So I don't know. Do not jump into this title with issue number 20 because you will be entirely lost. But as is, I keep reading it, man. I keep reading it. I keep writing liking it. I keep writing it. I am James Tynion. Surprise. I didn't ever want to say that in front of Pete and Justin because I didn't want them to know. It feels like a conflict of interest when we talk about all of my great titles, like Something is Killing the Children and Exquisite Corpses. But you heard it here first, folks. I am writer James Tynion IV, the Tiny Onion. Touched by a Demon, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kristen Goodsnuck. We talked to her on the live show a week back. Time has no meaning anymore. This is the final issue of this title about a bunch of demons that open up a self-help shop on Earth. And they really do want to help people, but it keeps going horribly wrong every single issue. This issue, they kind of help somebody, but also end up paying tribute to their demon lord. This is a very fun title. I love the art in here. It's hyper cartoony, but there's a lot of emotion that comes through as well. You'll laugh out loud while you're reading this. And we talked to Kristen about this, but it ends on a note where there's a million more stories you could tell here. It could be ongoing forever. So I do hope people pick up these issues. They pick up the trade so we can get more because I would like to be touched by a demon once again. The Fury of Firestorm, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Rafael de la Torre. Now, Firestorm is going through some serious changes in this series. Ronnie Raymond and Dr. Martin Stein, something has happened to them. There's a third entity in the Firestorm Matrix that seems to be taking over and driving maybe Ronnie crazy? We don't exactly know, but he has attacked a small town and put them through a bunch of biological and chemical changes. The army and an old flame of his are trying to turn him back. But this issue, the third personality, I'm putting question marks here because a lot of this title is about the mystery of what's going on with Firestorm, emerges fully. I still think this is very similar to what we have had recently happen with Captain Atom, but Jeff Lemire is a solid writer, everything that he does. I do really like what Rafael de la Torre is doing on art, and I'm a fan of Firestorm, so particularly this issue, we get a lot of exploration of the history. In a sense, we were thrust into the situation in the first issue. The second issue takes a step back, sets up, who's Firestorm? What's going on with him? What is his origin? Why is this happening? So if you need that information, issue number 1 and issue number 2 really work like a pair. If you don't need that information, I feel like you'll probably still be on the fence about the series a little bit, but there's promise that big things are coming, and we certainly will see. Again, as a Firestorm fan, I'm on board with this and interested to see where this goes. But I know, again, on the Patreon Discord, some people have been like putting this to the middle, to the bottom of their next level pack. So I'm curious to hear what folks think about the second issue and whether it bumps up in their estimation. The Uncanny X-Men, number 28 for Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Luciano Vecchio. Tons of stuff going down in this issue. Oh boy, where even to start? So over at Gray Balkan Prison, we get the reveal of Prisoner X, the mysterious avian, if I remember the term, basically uber psychic like Professor X, who has been held in there. And it's not what I don't think anybody predicted or expected, because I believe it is, unless I'm wrong, an entirely new character who's revealed here, who definitely leans into the horror that Gail Simone has been playing with all along. Meanwhile, Gambit is off becoming a dragon. The Louisiana X-Men are dealing with an incursion of what looks like the classic New Mutants, while the Outliers are in some sort of AI simulation of Professor X's mansion, dressed up like New Mutants themselves. I'll say I love everything that's going on here. Said this with the past couple of issues, but this title, I think story-wise, has been on absolute fire as everything is going on. Very intrigued by the reveal of Prisoner X and what it means for Gray Malkin Prison and our warden. Love everything with the Outliers. I think they have never been clearer as characters than when they're dressed in the classic New Mutants uniforms, which probably says more about me and how my brain works than anything else. My one little quibble here is the layouts, where I don't necessarily have a problem with the art or the way the characters are drawn, but there's not really a very clear delineation between these multiple places where we're getting the action, so everything kind of bleeds into each other. So sometimes it's a little hard to follow when you have Gray Malkin Prison, the Haven House, and also this simulation going on at the same time. There was a couple of issues back when we got the horror characters attacking Art Arc, and at the same time the Outliers were being told a tale of the Old West. The art style delineated it a little more clearly, so you knew when those things were going on the same page, what we were looking at and what we were reading, so you could get the juxtaposition that Gail Simone was going for. I don't think it's as clear here, and it muddies what otherwise would be a really good and really interesting story, but I still really like it. This is probably the best of the X-Men books right now, and I'm all in, baby. Geiger, number 23 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. Geiger ended on a huge cliffhanger at the end of the last issue, where he was sent back in time, seemingly, to visit his family who died previously in a nuclear apocalypse. We get that. Not too much of a surprise that he's yanked out and is like, put me back in, boss. Meanwhile, the Northerner, who is our time traveler who's trying to keep the Civil War on track, gets a huge mythology dump here. And that sort of seems to be the point, building out the bigger unknown universe that Jeff Johns has been playing with these various titles. We get a tease of Junkyard Joe coming back at the end. And I'm into it. I like this mythology. Geiger is a pretty straightforward character. He just wants his family back, like Thomas Jane on Arrested Development. That's pretty much it. And he gets angry and becomes radioactive and beats some guys up. But mixing him in with these more complicated characters like the Northerner, and also simpler characters like Junkyard Joe, really makes him pop out more. I think he's going to work well once he's part of a team versus having pleasing to look at because of the Gary Frank art, but relatively repetitive adventures issue after issue. Showdown number 1 from Ignition Press, written by Dave Wiles Ghost. I definitely pronounced that wrong. Art by Tad Kalusha. Maybe I mispronounced that. I don't know. This is maybe my favorite issue of the week. I love this. This is about a woman whose brother died in an accident or seeming accident years earlier. There's one guy she blames. She returns to town and is like, hey, I'm going to challenge you to an Old West style showdown. Only one of us makes it out alive. And that's where we start. We see the showdown is definitely happening. Jump back in time, showing her arriving in town, showing why this other guy actually agrees to it. It gives a lot of nice texture to both characters and explains why they've been brought low to this place where they're like, let's just beat the hell out of each other. And there's promise that it's going to be like brutal and bloody and violent and probably very emotional at the same time. This it's not the exact same story at all, but it reminded me a little bit of Southern Bastards in terms of, well, just coming back to town and going to beat some asses with a baseball bat. And that's pretty much what's going on here. So if you're looking for more than that, do not miss this book. I thought it was great. I was very surprised, and man, I can't wait to pick up the second issue. Bleeding Hearts, number 4 from DC Vertigo, written by Dennis Camp, art by Stipan Morian. We are following a world that has been taken over by zombies, and in particular, one zombie who has a beating heart and is starting to have some feelings towards the live ones, specifically a woman and her daughter, who, I say daughter question mark, because I honestly can't remember whether she is adopted or picked up after the zombie apocalypse, but I do think it is her daughter. And in this issue, they're having tea parties, they're having a nice time, they're having dance parties, but there are forces, specifically zombies, who are encroaching around them on all sides. What works really nicely about this issue is after jumping back and forth in perspectives over the first 3 issues, we get both in this issue. The characters still can't communicate, and I think a lot of this title, or at least the first arc, is probably about communication and how we talk to each other. But we're getting to see the human perspective, we're getting to see the zombie perspective, we're going back and forth. So it's starting to feel like more of a, please excuse the pun, fleshed out story as we go. I was feeling a little iffy about this last issue, if we were going to keep jumping back and forth, but I'm back on board with this issue. And man, Stipan Morian's art is great. These zombies look like nothing else that we've seen. They're certainly not Walking Dead zombies with their little pockets of flowers and fungus and things. There's also in this issue, I'm going to get the name wrong, but there's a zombie character called Skitters in the Corner of Your Eye that is very funny and scary at the same time. So good mix of horror. We haven't quite gotten to the romance yet, but I think we're getting there. So like I said, back on board with Bleeding Hearts as of this issue. Captain America number 11 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Valerio Schiti. The road to Armageddon. It is being walked in a big way in this issue as Captain America fights against various forces that are trying to take over Latveria. Specifically, this issue, the Red Hulk and his Gamma Corps, I don't know if they're called that, they don't call them that in the issue, but it's a bunch of Hulks, attack Latveria and basically work as a weapon of mass destruction. Captain America is caught in the middle of this, as are the remaining agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The other big revelation at the end of the last issue is that Dr. Doom cloned himself and has a younger version of himself who's being raised in Latveria to be a better version of himself. It doesn't have the same memories as Doom. It has the opportunity to do better and be better, but it is still just a child. And Red Hulk is like, oh, why don't we just Doom torture me? Let's just kill this child. So classic would you kill baby Hitler debate that Pete hates so much, so he probably would have hated this issue. But versus what I was saying earlier about Ultimate Endgame, this does give me the scale that I've been missing in the lead up to Armageddon. It's still very busy. There's a lot of things happening, but the way that Valerio Schiti draws this issue, there's a full page spread of the Hulks dropping on Latveria that feels a little bit like that airdrop. I'm getting the term wrong, but that airdrop shot from Godzilla, the 2014 version, where just the red stripes coming down from the sky. It's very cool. It feels big. Red Hulk is really scary here. I don't know that I am completely getting how we got to this point, and I don't know how we're going to get to Armageddon from here or what's going to happen in Armageddon, but Captain America is really in the thick of it here. Some big things happen by the end. All I'll say is between this and Ultimate Endgame, bad week to be Captain America. That's it. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm still iffy about Armageddon, but if it does feel, if Chip Zdarsky is going to bring this scale there, it will feel event-sized. Whether the story brings it, we shall see. The Forged, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka and Eric Trautman, art by Mike Henderson. I honestly don't remember the last time this title came out. It's about a big universal war between humans who have been augmented into the Forged. Basically, they have big battle suits. And aliens that I think we finally see this issue. I don't think we have seen them before, but we get a sense of them here. I just love Mike Henderson's art here. This is big sci-fi that feels on par with what Mobius and company were doing, and like the Incal and other things like that. Similarly to the Incal, it's hard to hold on to what exactly is going on in the story because everything is pitched at the umpteenth big broad sci-fi degree, but there's still little character moments in here that are fun and funny. Honestly, maybe I'm dumb. I don't know exactly what's going on here, but I still like reading it, and in particular, I like looking at it because of Mike Henderson's very cartoony art, but at the same time, big. It feels, I don't know, it's like Dune meets something. You figure it out. You decide. Just Brutal, number 3 from Ignition Press, written by Dennis Hopeless, art by Brom Revel. Here's another person that we talked to a couple of weeks back, Dennis Hopeless, about this very title, Just Brutal, on the podcast. There's a lot of things you can describe it about, but it's sort of like, what if Masters of the Universe grew up, went back to Earth, got married, and then years later, Skeletor attacked. That's kind of it. Some big things happen in this issue. Dennis Hopeless really is not pulling back from emotional hits. And man, the way that they play out a hit at the end, I really don't think I've seen something like this in comics before. It is, per the title, just brutal. It's really sad. It's very upsetting how it happens. But gorgeously drawn by Brom Revel, which I know I've been using this word a lot this episode, but it is very more cartoony art, but doesn't hold back from the violence or the action. There's some big battle scenes. There's character scenes as well. This title is great. If you haven't picked it up, definitely go back, pick up the first issue, pick up the second, get caught up between for this one, because really this title is like, there's some beautiful family drama stuff going on here between all the big fun ideas. And we'll see. There's a lot going on plot-wise, so I'm really curious to see how this wraps up as it continues. The Mortal Thor, number 10 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Pascal Ferry. We are following a guy named Sigurd Jarlsson, who may or may not be the mighty Thor in human form, but he does have a hammer on a string and is beating butts with it. This issue, he goes up against the Grey Gargoyle in a brutal fight. Not to keep using the word brutal as well, but oh my gosh, really doesn't hold back here. I would love to know a little bit more about this Sigurd Jarlsson, because he really just feels like Thor of another name and is fighting Thor's enemies. And despite the amount of blood on him, feels like he's impervious himself. So maybe there's something more going on there. We definitely know that in 4 issues time, in 4 issues time, I believe they are going to be wrapping up the Mortal Thor and kicking into whatever is next. Probably a reveal that Sigurd is or isn't Thor. I guess we'll see. I still feel like there's a twist in the background there. But as is, if you ever wondered, like, what if Thor was the Punisher but had a hammer instead of a gun? That's basically what this title is. And last but not least, The Department of Truth, number 37 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, who is me, art by Ben Templesmith. I did a great job on this book. Just kidding. I'm not James Tynion IV. You knew that. You figured that out. Anyway, this issue, or rather this arc, is focusing on dinosaurs in Florida mixed with religion. We said this with the last issue, but it is shocking that Ben Templesmith hasn't been on this title before, because he is such the perfect fit for absolutely everything that is going on here. And if you feel like this is the worst possible commentary I can give, but if you feel like Department of Truth gets too dense at times, because sometimes it's just pages of text that feels like James Tynion showing off, like, I did a lot of research on this. If you like it more pared back into a wild story that has some great dinosaur drawings from Ben Templesmith, is dealing with the division between faith and religion, the way that it is executed in America today, as this title does so well, this is great. I really enjoyed this arc, and I really can get into it when I have felt like it gets a little obtuse at times in this title. So good stuff. And I think you could probably pick up the last issue and this issue without reading anything else on Department of Truth, if you really want to, and you will understand what's going on. Basically, like how you can imagine dragons, here they imagine dinosaurs. There you go. And that is it for The Stack. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in with this and sticking with me in this non-co-hosted episode. Like I said, Justin and Peeth both had Peeth. I'm going to call him Peeth from now on. Justin and Peeth Had conflicts this episode, but hopefully they will be back next week. We will see what happens. Either way, thank you for your support. Thanks for tuning in. If you would like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about comics, and usually there's more people than just me. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club. Justin, hit them with your pithy, funny joke is a callback to something we said earlier. He's not here. Peeth, say yeah. Yeah. I miss my friends. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they